Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Welcome to Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you with us today, and a very happy Tuesday. Is it Tuesday?
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday. That's what I said. It's all right. I've been on vacation. That's a sure sign that vacation worked.
Yeah, so you completely missed the day.
Yeah. I'm also at that point in life where anytime you get a compliment, it's followed by the phrase, for a guy your age. I'm not sure I like that, Matt.
No, that doesn't sound like that's very much of a compliment.
Yeah, but I did get a little bit of a chance to take a break, and it was nice to have a little time off, and it's nice to realize that you don't know what day it is. So that's all. It's all good.
Well, as long as you get back on to Wednesday and then you know that you're talking to Dr. Greg, you'll be all good.
I am talking to Dr. Greg Smalley, and it's always a very easy hour of radio because he brings so much to the table. I just kind of sit back and put on the uh-huh machine. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
See, that's my whole point. But my job is to try to make him feel less nervous because from what I can tell, when he gets on the air, he's all nervous and he's basically a mess.
He's a pretty shy guy.
No, I get that. So I do my best to just try to make him feel comfortable. But we're going to talk about that crazy little thing called marriage today. And the greatest commandment, according to God, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is love your neighbor as yourself. How's that working for you? You like your neighbor?
I'm trying to think who my neighbors are right now.
Okay. Well, look to the right, look to the left.
Well, yeah. The guy to my right, maybe.
But yeah, but not so much me.
The guy to the left.
All right, I'm not going to take that personally, but I'm just saying that's a big command to love your neighbor as yourself, because that's where I struggle with that, because that's a hard one, because people can be very annoying, can't they?
No comment.
All right. I'll just go ahead and say it. People can be annoying. So to learn how to love them and love them well is, I think, one of the greatest things you can try to work on every day of your life, is your Christian life, is to try to find new ways to love people that might be hard to love. But Dr. Greg Smalley is a regular guest on the show and no stranger to the network. Greg, welcome back, as always. Great to have you.
Well, Bill, thank you so much, Matt. Great to be with both of you. Happy Thursday.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate you making me look less stupid. All right. Let's talk about a myth. Let's talk about a myth right off the bat. You need to find someone who will love you.
Well, I love how you referenced the greatest commandment. And from that, I think that it's clear that part of our purpose here on earth is to love and to love well. And yet, I think, as you just said, that for a lot of people, we misunderstand that. And there's a lot of myths out there, and one of them being that idea that the greatest happiness is to love and be loved. And I'll never forget my daughter, 5 years old, so she's now 22, she's getting married in January. When she was in kindergarten, she started liking this one kid, and so she kept telling me that they're in love, they're going to get married, they're going together, whatever. And so I'll never forget the day that I came home from work and found Taylor up in her bedroom bawling, just big tears, just weeping. And she goes, honey, what's going on? Why are you crying? She said, well, Daddy, today, this kid's name was Hank, so, which is awesome. She goes, today Hank broke up with me. So now the love affair is over. You know, he's broken her little heart. And so, I'm trying to console her and smile and kind of laugh at the same time because she's five. And I'll never forget it's just big tears. And I, you know, honey, I'm so sorry. I'm sure that hurts. Daddy, it does. You know, and then she says to me, and now I'll never find someone who will love me.
Mm.
And that's a 5-year-old.
Wow.
What on earth? Where did she learn that? I would think that, you know, in my home that she was seeing her mom and dad love each other, that she knew the love of God. We talk, I mean, all this. And yet once this little 5-year-old dude, you know, dumped her, now she's worried that she's never going to find someone to love her. And I think that we see that being played out. I think that for a lot of people, they walk into marriage, they walk into relationships with this hope that now I finally have found the love of my life. I finally found someone who will love me the way that I need to be loved and want to be loved. And I think what happens is the focus shifts to making sure then that I'm being loved in the way that I need to be. And that's how I believe that myth takes over and really damages relationships. If that's our focus, if my whole focus in my marriage is to figure out how to get my wife to love me, man, I'm in trouble.
Mm. Let me ask you this, Greg. Is the default position that there's a scarcity of love out there?
I think that just part of this fallen world that we live in, I think that the evil one preys upon our insecurity. I think that at some level, you know, that a lot of us struggle with am I being loved? Am I lovable? Am I worth enough for someone to love me? I think that's an easy one for him to sort of write these lies in our heart that in fact you are unlovable. I mean, I remember this, we had a little neighborhood girl, and it was right about this time because she was 5. She's the same age as my daughter, Taylor. And I remember her one time just kind of when she was over playing with Taylor, kind of joined me as I was watching a football game. And we sat there and watched this game. And her parents had just gone through a really tough divorce. I mean, I didn't know them well enough, but it sounded like it was tough. He split. He was gone. And I'll never forget her just sitting there and saying, hey, maybe next weekend. And again, this is a 5-year-old little girl saying, maybe next weekend I could come back over and you and me, we could watch another football game together. And then she goes, and then I could pretend that you're my daddy because my daddy left and I know it's my fault. How in the world would a little 5-year-old come up with that belief? And that's where I just know that's Satan, that he wants her to believe that her dad's gone because maybe she wasn't lovable. Maybe there was something defective about her. It's her fault. And I think that becomes such a wound, that becomes such a lie written on her little heart.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, she's 23 now, just like my daughter is. My daughter's just about to get married, and who knows, maybe that little girl is about to be married and perhaps is walking that huge lie into her marriage because that'll affect how she shows up. If she's so afraid that men will leave because she's not whatever, not good enough, I mean, you just see how that'll play out. You see what she will have to do to get him to love her. And that's the problem. I think that we're Satan is the father of lies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he wants us to believe these things. And I didn't ever, if you'd ask me, well, so is that your deal? Did you try to get Aaron, you know, to love you? I mean, I would have never said, well, yeah, or yeah, I'm aware I'm doing that. No way. That just never would have occurred to me. But as I've really thought this through, and again, this is kind of how we start the whole book, The Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, with trying to really better understand this, how love gets twisted. But there was definitely a way in which I was trying to get my wife to love me the way that I thought she should.
Mm. So let's talk about the truth. And the truth is you need to be loved. Your need to be loved has been really met by God. And you're completely loved by the creator of the universe. But how do we make that work when we want earthly love and we want all of our little earthly needs met by someone maybe other than God?
Yeah, and I think this is where the change began for me. And I think I I was listening to a Gary Thomas talk, and I love Gary Thomas. He's just one of my favorite people, just such an amazing teacher and man of God. And he made that little statement. It was just, it wasn't even like a big part of his point, but I just remember thinking, that's true, that I am 100% loved by God. And I started thinking about the ways in which that I try to get my wife to love me in certain ways. And I realized, you know what? My job isn't actually to get her to love me. God's made it pretty clear that I'm to love him and I'm to love others. You know, men will know you're my disciples by the way you love one another. I mean, it seems pretty clear that's the job that I've been given. But boy, I spent a lot of time trying to get her to love me. And a lot of time and effort and energy wasted because I don't know if I really fully was able to embrace that notion that I am, you know what, the truth is, I am completely 100% loved by God. He has already completely met that need. And he makes this so clear. I've loved you with an everlasting love. Nothing will ever separate us from God's love. He's abounding in steadfast love. You know, for God so what? Loved us. I mean, so loved us. It's been a huge paradigm change in my life just to go, yeah, I don't have this deep, dark love hole in my heart. None of us do.
Yeah.
You may feel that way, and Satan may have convinced you that that's true, but the truth is that God has loved us completely.
Mm-hmm. Greg, what was your pivot point where you went from wanting Erin to love you and trying everything to get her to love you to going, oh, wait a minute, I'm completely loved. What happened?
Yeah, I had to finally understand, one, that I had been sucked into this lie about love,
mm-hmm.
that it's this happiness in life is loving and being loved. The truth is that it's not, you know, it's not being loved because God's already done that. It's actually loving. That's my only job. My son, who's now 15, he was watching our wedding video the other day, and it was just funny. Our kids will find the CD, put it in, DVD, whatever. And so he was like, you got to see yourself. And so he's mocking me. We're just laughing about how young I looked.
For good reason. Did you have the MacGyver hair?
Man, it was a mullet, basically.
Oh, see what I mean? Yeah. See? They should be laughing.
Yeah. Party up front.
Yeah, yeah,
or is
yeah.
it business up front, party in the back? Yeah. It wasn't that bad.
Okay.
But he's totally, though, mocking me. We're laughing. But it was right when we were exchanging vows. And I just was able to I'm just watching me stand before the preacher, this all of our friends and family, right, looking at Erin, committing to her that I would spend my life loving her. There was no part of the vows that I took that was about somehow figuring out how to get her to love me. And I think that really showed up, like how I began to see it is like, I think the big lie that Satan convinced me of was that I was a failure. And so I have historically, we've been married almost 25 years, but I have spent a whole lot of time in my marriage trying to get my wife to make me feel successful. Like just to, like give you a great example, just the other night. So we're just laying in bed and she just, we're talking and she said, you know, she goes, I've been afraid to bring this up, which I love it when she starts off a conversation that way. I've been meaning to tell you something. And she just shared that she's felt sort of lonely in our marriage as of late. And which, you know, instantly I start to think about all of the things that I've done for her, the times that we've had, the walks that we've taken. And so instantly I start to defend myself. So she's just kind of sharing, I've just felt lonely. And so basically I'm saying to her, that's stupid and that's wrong. And let me give you 10 examples of why you should never feel that way. And so I walk through a bunch of, hey, remember I did this and I did that. And, oh, don't forget this. So why would you possibly feel alone? See, that's a great example of in those moments I'm not feeling loved. I'm not feeling successful. I feel like she's criticizing me, challenging, you know, the way that I am as a husband, I'm feeling failed. And so what I do is I work really hard to defend myself, hoping that she'll, you know, finally give in and go, yeah, you know what, now that you bring all those great examples up, you're right. What was I thinking? I'm not alone. You're great. You're an awesome husband. Let's go to bed.
Well, Matt's making me feel not successful as a host by not going to break. So we'll be right back. Lots more with Dr. Greg Smalley. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. I'll be right back. Nice to have you listening today. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson on Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Greg Smalley. This guy's got a wealth of information on marriage, 25 years under his own belt, and we're just talking about what it's like to love others and to do it sacrificially. And Greg, I want to move on to that, because what does loving others look like?
Bill, the more that I've been able to really see clearly the ways in which that I've tried to manipulate, control, whatever, to get Aaron to love me, that as I've been able to step back and go, you know what? No, my job is to love, and God will always meet completely my need to be loved. Then for me, the question became, all right, so if my job is to love my wife, what does that really look like? Like as a guy, I mean, just make it simple. Like, what's the target? What am I aiming at? And what, you know, what I started to realize is when you start to look at the Bible and see how often God paired the idea of love with the idea of sacrifice, it started to blow my mind. I mean, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. So he sacrificed, gave up his son. You know, that we're told every day to take up our cross, which is sacrifice. You know, no greater love is this than to lay down one's life for one's friend. You know, it says in 1 John 3:16, this is how we know what love is. So, I mean, literally going, how do we know what love is? Like, what does that look like? Well, here it is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And we ought to do the same. We should lay down our life for our brothers and sisters. So for me, if I can stay rooted in the truth that God completely has already met my need to be loved, therefore, I want to spend my time and effort and energy on loving Erin like I promised and vowed to her on our wedding day, I think the evidence how that's going to show up is by sacrificing for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, because, you know, that doesn't necessarily come natural to me. I mean, I can be pretty selfish. I know that's hard to imagine.
It's totally hard.
Yeah. I know. That's
not
what
you.
I say.
Not you. Anyone
exactly.
But you. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
But apparently it is.
Yeah. So when you were giving us some example of pillow talk that you and Aaron were having, and she was saying, I don't want to bring this up, or I get nervous bringing this up, but I've been feeling a little lonely. As I was thinking about it over the break, it doesn't sound like she was bringing that up in any offensive way, yet mm-hmm. you responded in a defensive way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because it that's my issue. The
okay.
lie in my heart is that I'm a failure. And so when I hear anytime my wife brings up a frustration, brings up maybe how she's been feeling, you know, within our marriage, what her experience has been like, she was being honest and saying, I'm not saying it's always been this way, but for right now, I'm just feeling lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the defensiveness is because, no, you can't share those things because it makes me feel failed. So
mm-hmm.
how dare you bring up something negative about me? I don't want to feel that way. I mean, that's what I do when my wife brings up this stuff. My first instinct, my natural reaction, I think because of the lie that was written on my heart is to defend. And it was so vintage. I mean, I know this. And yet I still was committed for a good 20 minutes of giving her example
yeah.
after example.
Yeah. Let me ask
That's
you,
sad.
Let me ask you this. When conversation is requested and women talk, they usually feel better after they talk, and men usually don't feel better after they talk because they end up feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
Because they feel inadequate or they feel like they failed or let their wife down. But for some odd reason, women tend to feel better after they've had a talk. Why are we at odds like that?
You know, I think, first of all, women work out their feelings through conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times my wife will make statements like that, and what she's needing to do is to process out loud and mm-hmm. really explore that and better understand it. And she may come to a completely different conclusion if I was able to talk to her in a way that was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, for me, any sniff, any whiff, any hint that I'm not doing it right,
yeah.
I go to a bad place versus when I'm able to step back in that moment and say, now, wait a minute, my value as a husband, who I am, my love, that all comes from God.
Mm-hmm.
And truth exists with God. When I'm able to do that, it helps. It frees me up a little bit more not to be so defensive. And then I'm actually able to just to listen and to ask some questions and try to really better understand it. I think the sacrifice for me, and again, if I could go back and have that same conversation over again, which we did later, but mm-hmm. if I could have done it right the first time, see, the sacrifice in that moment would have been me giving up my need to defend myself, to not feel misportrayed, to get her to understand all the things I have been doing. The sacrifice would have been giving that stuff up, and instead of me being understood, it would have been to understand her first. And that's just hard.
Mm-hmm.
I blow that one. That's tough for me to do.
And then do you have a little bit of layer of shame and guilt laying underneath all that can get provoked?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love that you brought that up because now I feel shameful and
well,
and
I figured
naked.
I'm here for you.
You know,
I'm here for you.
I think where then I start to feel guilty is that I'm a terrible communicator with my wife. Like I know what I need to do. I mean, we teach on this. I mean, I can give you all the head knowledge. I can give you the tool.
Sure.
I have fancy names for it. It's called Love Talk. LUVE. It's an acronym. I mean, I know all that. It's just it's so interesting to me how, even though I know all that, how quickly I can get hooked, and that stuff is driven by that lie,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I love John 8:32, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
The more that I can stay dialed into God, how He sees me, what's true about me, the fact that He's loved me completely. I mean, all that can help, but sometimes I just don't turn there. I just get sucked in going, well, man, I don't like what she's saying, and you need to say it differently, or
yeah.
you need to feel differently, or you need to see the truth. And,
yeah.
And that's where, man, that's where our marriage takes a turn for the worse.
All right, we're going to talk about the 12 ways to serve your spouse when we come back from break. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson today. Hope you're enjoying today's show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. So glad you joined us today. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. And I'm talking to Dr. Greg Smalley. And we are talking about the marriage relationship and how all that goes. And what I really want to talk about in this remaining half hour are the 12 ways to serve your spouse. And I know it's a long list, but let's get started and try to get through it. I know number one is a lifelong commitment. Say more about that.
Yeah, so when the paradigm shifted in my life to instead of trying to get Erin to love me, that really my job is to love her, and that's going to show up as sacrifice, then as I thought, well, what would that then look like within the marriage? Like what would be the things that I'd be doing? And I started looking at all the research and going, man, there's tons of studies on why marriages succeed, you know, traits of a great marriage. And so I literally spent about a year just looking through all those, looking for what are the common behaviors that you see over and over again in these studies. And so when I was done looking at that, it seemed like there were about 12. And so really, so in the crazy little thing called marriage, I mean, we spend the whole book really unpacking these 12. And, you know, lifelong commitment was something that I thought that I did when I stood up at our wedding and said, yeah, I love you for a lifetime. And that's that. And just moved on. Like I didn't realize commitment is something that I have to keep thinking about. And so, you know, as I've really looked at this, I think commitment boils down to this. It's one, it's a decision that we make that divorce isn't an option. So it's like in our mind, we have to decide that's not an option. Like we will stay together. Divorce isn't an option. And then I'm going to do everything then within my power to make sure that our marriage is strong. But on a real, real practical level, one of the things that I've started doing differently now that's I think really, really helped my sense of commitment to my wife and to my marriage is that I've paid attention to what is it that I love about my marriage. I mean, it's easy to think about Erin and what do I love about her? And there's so many good qualities and traits about her that I just admire and I'm drawn to. But you know what? Our marriage is a living, you know, entity. It's something that we have to attend to. But so what I started going, you know, what are some of my favorite things about being married? Like, what do I love about my marriage? And what I've noticed is that the more things that I've thought of and the more things about my marriage that I really value, that's what my heart's drawn to. I love that verse that says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, Bill, honestly, I don't think historically that I ever really thought about seeing my marriage as a treasure, like really being clear on what do I value about my marriage. I mean, things like, you know, for me, I love that Erin and I get to, we're on this adventure together. I love thinking about my marriage as an adventure. It's like we're traveling down a river and we're in a canoe. You know, we've got our four kids in the middle. We're just paddling away. And you never know what's around the next corner. You never know what you're going to face. Is it going to be calm waters, rapids? I mean, are there going to be people trying to shoot at us? And you just don't know. And I love that. I love not knowing what's around the next corner. But what I love is that there's no one else on this earth that I would rather be in that canoe with than Erin.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about having a shared spiritual intimacy where, you know, it's the whole idea of 1 + 1 is going to equal 3 because your marriage is going to be about something bigger than just the two of you?
Yeah, I think if we're going to have a lifelong marriage, and so another way to really build a strong marriage is to recognize that the power of our shared spiritual relationship. But again, I needed like make that really practical. Yeah, okay, I get that we need to read the Bible together and have a devotional and go to church. Man, I get all that. But I think for me, and we really got into this in the book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, is that, I mean, you know what? God gave us this amazing gift called marriage. And here he's taken me as a guy and her as a woman and put us together as one. And I believe that oneness, that unity, when he brought us together, created such a powerful thing. I believe that marriage is one of the most powerful relationship forces on earth. And therefore, a part of living out our spiritual relationship is to realize that when God brought Erin and I together, he created such a superpower, this oneness, that we need to identify some things that we're pursuing together. We need to dream together. Like, what is our marriage going to be about? Where are we heading? And so, you know, for Aaron and I, you know, we, like, in this season of our life, our shared calling together as a couple is to go minister to marriages. And we talk about that all the time. We dream about that. We look for opportunities to go do that. And I tell you, when I am up on stage and my wife and I are there together and she's teaching and I'm just looking at her, I mean, there are times that I'm just amazed. And I feel, I mean, there's few times in few situations that help me to feel closer to her than when we feel like we're using our marriage to serve God.
Yeah.
Again, we do that by doing marriage seminars, but man, you can do that in a number of ways.
Yeah. Well, you got a rock star wife and you're a great opening act.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody comes to see her. I'm like the trophy husband.
Exactly.
I just stand there and look good and, you know.
All right. Let's talk about the positive communication to know and be known. Now, of course, that could be a little difficult because people can have intimacy issues and they can have insecurity issues and they can have all kinds of stuff as we age that makes things worse.
Yeah.
You can't still love me the way you once did. Come on.
Right.
So to know and be known, that can be pretty scary.
It can be.
How do we stay in the game?
Well, what I've noticed about us is that, I mean, who doesn't know communication is important? I mean, you know, come on, we get that. You know, that's the lifeblood of a marriage is our communication. Great. The problem for us is we have four kids. We both work. We have a ministry where we travel. We've got, I mean, the list can go on. All of us could create this huge list of all the stuff that goes on. So what I started noticing within our marriage is that when Aaron and I would talk, typically we're talking about budgets. We're talking about to-do lists. We're talking about the kids. We're talking about a schedule. And I started to notice that monopolized what little time it felt like we had to actually communicate. It seemed like we spent most of that time just administrating our marriage. And that's a problem. We weren't getting to know and be known. We weren't deepening our knowledge in one another. We were just doing life and making sure that we're running the family, and which has to happen.
Yeah.
But it can't just be that. We have to have a kind of communication that's not administrating our marriage.
Okay. Let's talk about the healthy conflict management, because I think this is a nice tie-in, because communication could be hard, but now how do you do conflict well? Because for me, I'm going back to your pillow talk. She brings something up late at night. That can be, for a guy, it can provoke you. And all of a sudden, I went from being tired to not being tired.
Yeah.
And your heart's racing and you go, how do we have healthy conflict?
Yeah, I think over the years, probably the best lesson that I've learned about conflict is that when Aaron and I have one of these difficult conversations, to your point, like when she, you know, she's just saying, hey, I just feel lonely, that I have to really recognize that it's in those moments that my heart shuts down. So I was offended. I felt misportrayed. I felt that she was missing all the things I was doing. But see, all those feelings end up shutting our heart down. Our heart closes. Think of like the little roly-poly bug, and you flick it, and what does it do? It rolls up in this tight little ball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that moment that I'm not safe. So literally, when my heart is shut down, then I'm either going to fight or flight. So for me, the fighting comes out as defensiveness, as, you know, debating, is trying to convince her that she's wrong. But see, all that's being done because my heart is totally shut down.
Mm.
You know, when my heart's open, I listen well. You know, I'm empathic. You know, I'm trying to understand her. When my heart's closed, man, it's about me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm defending or withdrawing or, you know, whatever I do. And I think that's been one of the best things to learn for me, just to recognize, just keep that little roly-poly bug in my mind and go, when I'm hurt, when I'm frustrated, when I'm offended, I'm probably going to shut down. And so therefore, instead of trying to work through the relationship issue. Like laying in bed, the best thing that I could have done would have been to say, you know what, Aaron, I love you and I really do want to listen to you, but right now I'm really shut down. Let me give me a couple minutes here. I mean, I think one of the best things that we can do to handle conflict well is to realize that my heart shut down. Then I instead of trying to talk to my wife, what I should be focused on is how do I get my heart back open?
Okay. I was just going to ask you for some practical advice, and you just gave it to me before I asked. That was wonderful because you said—
We're just in sync.
Yeah, but you said, give me a minute to think about this. Let me just have a— When you said a minute, I thought you were going to say a couple decades, but you said just a minute. I thought, okay, yeah. you're still staying present, and you're still engaged, and you're still listening to her. You're just trying to gather your thoughts and be ready to respond. All right, let's keep this thing going, and let's talk about how important it is to spend enjoyable time together. Because before you were talking about kind of living in the execute mode, where it's, know, who's taking the kids, who's picking up this, what are we doing for this, budgets, that kind of stuff. That's execute, but it's not really spending that time where you're simply just delighting in each other's company. So how do you make time and plan for that?
Yeah, in the book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, we really tried to make this idea of spending time together real, real practical. Like what, we're all busy, I get that. And one of the things that Aaron and I have truly done much better. We're doing this pretty well, and that's, you know, in the face of busyness, we're starting to recognize that there are key moments during the day that actually take advantage of them. They're going to happen, but if we actually do something with that moment, it's really.
We might have lost him there for a minute, but he'll probably be back. I think it's time to take a break. When we come back, we'll more with Dr. Greg Smalley. You listen to Bill Arnold filling in for Susie Larson. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be right back. Crazy thing called marriage. Dr. Greg Smalley and his wife Erin have put this book together, and there's talking about 12 ways to serve your spouse. Right before we went to break, we were talking about having enjoyable time together, and that's where we last left off. Greg, fill in the rest of those dots for us.
Yeah. So you mean before I rudely hung up on you?
Yeah, before. I actually hung up on you.
Someone is messing with someone. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for us, it's I need just give me some really simple, practical things I can do that to spend time with Aaron. And so what we've been doing differently in our marriage is just noticing that there are some key moments that seem to happen every day that we can take advantage of. For example, how we say goodbye in the morning. So before one of us leaves or both of us leave, how we say goodbye can actually strengthen our marriage. So it's a brief amount of time together that we do. So instead of just, you know, rushing out the door, see you later, you know, doing sort of a faux kiss in the air. I mean, what we're doing is that we actually come together. And I will just, hey, what's one thing I could pray for you about? So I can pray with my wife to encourage her and then give her a kiss. I mean, it's that simple. But it's just noticing that how we say goodbye, see, that's the feeling that my wife will hold all day long.
Hmm.
And that's that, I can easily do that. And so I've become extremely committed to not just hustling out the door. I go to track her down and spend 20 seconds. I mean, it doesn't have to take that much time. Another one is how we greet one another when we come home. And so, instead of just coming in and throwing my stuff down and saying, hey, what's for dinner? Where are the kids? It's actually just turning towards my wife, seeking her out, and just giving her a kiss, saying hello. I'm glad to be home. I mean, it's because what that does is that sets the tone for the rest of our evening together. So if I come in and ignore her, it's probably going to set a negative tone. But when I actually find her and say, great to see you, you're beautiful, give her a kiss, that I just noticed that the evening together goes much better.
So it's safe to say, even after 25 years of marriage, for you and Aaron, first impressions are still pretty important.
It's true. Look at the way the family dog greets her when she walks in.
Yeah.
I mean, that dog is real excited.
Yeah, a lot better than you.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm not going to let the dog beat me.
Trust me, the dog's beating you every night.
I know, but I can at least notice and learn from the dog.
Yeah.
And it really, I'm telling you, is seemingly insignificant as this sounds, like how you say goodbye, how you greet each other, really. It just has made such a world of difference. It's giving us some little connection points. I'm not saying that it replaces date nights. I'm not saying that this is the cure-all. I'm just saying, in the face of your busyness, why don't you take advantage of some of these key moments?
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, what kind of dog and what's the dog's name?
So we had, because she went to be with the Lord or wherever dogs go.
All right.
But a little Sheltie called, her name was Annie.
All right. But this whole conversation now conjures up the word cherish. Because what I heard you say is you're going to cherish her with poignant moments in the morning and at night when you come home.
Exactly. It's so easy to get disconnected to our spouse, to feel that way, to, like Aaron was saying, to feel alone. It's easy to be hurt, to be frustrated. I mean, you know, there's so many reasons why that we can, you know, almost feel negative towards our spouse. And the moment that we do that, it's very easy to lose sight of how valuable they are. In that verse, what you treasure, what you value, there will your heart be also.
Mm-hmm.
That what that means to me is that when I see my wife, I want to see her as this incredibly valuable person. Like, for example, my dad recently passed away. So back in March, he went to be with the Lord. And as I was cleaning out his office, I found this honking huge diamond. I mean, it literally looks like a 50-carat diamond that you used to keep on a shelf. And it was the most gaudy-looking fake thing you've ever seen. And I remember one time just saying, why do you keep that on your shelf? Like, seriously, we all know it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved his response. And he said, you know why? He picked it up, and he kind of made it so, like, it's over his eyes. So it's like he's looking through this diamond. He goes, when I honestly keep this on my shelf, because when I see your mom, that's what I see. I see this amazing person, this diamond, someone who's so valuable. And in other words, that was his way of keeping in mind how much he valued her. Because if you don't value your spouse, in other words, if you forget that what makes them so amazing because you're so frustrated or you're embedded in conflict or whatever, it's just so easy to lose sight of that. But the more that I remember that, man, Aaron is such an incredibly valuable person. I love that verse in Proverbs that says a man's greatest treasure is his wife. Now, I'm bothered that it doesn't say a woman's greatest treasure is her husband, but I, as a husband, love that verse.
Mm,
that's exactly right. That I want to see my wife through that lens of that diamond. I want to remember that there are things about her, like I love that my wife, she's just one of the most passionate people I know. Like, whatever she gets excited about, I get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be this most stupidest thing that I never would have even paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one time she was into, like, some sort of plaid color. And I just started noticing that particular plaid color all over the place. And I would go, that's so pretty. And then one day I was like, what? Wait a minute. I hate this anyway. Why do I care? And I realized it's because my wife gets so excited about this stuff that I end up liking. I mean, there's so many things about Aaron that I admire, that I like. It's like the Sound of Music. Remember when they were in the bedroom singing, you know, these are a few of my favorite things?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we need to to know about our spouse? What are a few of these favorite things about my spouse? Because I tell you, it does something to your brain in a positive way.
Yeah. So let's talk about nourishing your spouse with and doing it according to the love language that meets their needs.
Yeah, there's a great verse in Ephesians 5:29 that says, "For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ did the church." And so, I love that. You know, when we value something, then we're drawn to take good care of that thing. The question becomes, if based on my value for Erin, then I'm drawn to care for her, love her, then the question is, what does she want from me to feel, you know, cared for? I mean, I like watching football games, but I don't think that would help her to feel loved at all by making her watch a football game. And so part of it is just learning what is Aaron's love language. I love Gary Chapman's book, the Five Love Languages. For me, you know, the what I have Erin answer is just answer a little statement. I feel loved when you ...
Mm-hmm.
And it's given me just a real practical way to understand how then I can live out my calling, which is to love her. You know, Erin, what would I be doing? If I'm loving you, what does that look like? And then, you know, and she's given me some great ideas. You know, she loves it when I bring her little gifts. She loves it when I take 10 minutes every day and just check in. How are you feeling? I mean, she loves it when I ask her questions like that. So, I mean, there's things that I've learned to do that make, if I'm going to love her, I need to know how to do that. And so that's that idea of nourishing. So in the book, man, we give just some really easy that and you know, what your spouse needs to feel nourished.
Mm-hmm. And what about sharing responsibilities? I know that can be tricky because there's a lot of jobs that need to be done. And how do you divide those up and get them all done and do it in a loving fashion?
Yeah, I think the greatest thing, or one of the greatest things I've learned, is that Erin and I are never adversaries. We are always on the same team. We're married. We are teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And yet sometimes I act like an adversary. I act like I'm against her. And that's the evil one. That's what he wants. He wants us divided. But when I can remember that, whoa, we are on the same team, therefore we will either win together or we're going to lose together. It's our choice.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, when we make decisions or we're trying to figure out chores or just whatever, it always starts because we recognize that we are on the same team. And so we have to find solutions that feel good to both people. And that's really the simplest way that we've learned to work through just you know, figure out responsibilities and how to make decisions. We tell each other, hey, as your teammate, let's figure out a solution that you feel good about and I feel good about. And we've really been able to work through whatever decision we need to make, we've been able to figure that out because that is our core belief. We are on the same team.
Well, again, these hours go by so fast, and I know that all of this information is encouraging for people and something that they are going to use to make their marriage better. Would you pray for the couples that are struggling and people that need to start serving each other better?
Absolutely. Lord, thank you for loving us completely. God, thank you for the way that you've given us a job to do, and that's to love. Help us to do that well, Lord. So, within our marriage, Lord, help us to learn to do these things that speak love to our spouse. And so, Lord, and it's hard, man, the evil one's after us. Yeah, it's easy for me to get shut down because I get hurt and offended, Lord. So just help us to continue to remember that our job is to love and to keep our hearts open and just to really to do that well, Lord. And we're just confident you're in this. So, Lord, just thank you for what you do through our marriage.
Greg, thank you so much for being such an awesome guest, as you always are. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And just remember, plaid's not a color. It's a pattern. All right. You've been listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.